Welcome, first-time listeners and returners to the Sports Deli. The Sports Deli is sponsored by SportRx. SportRx is the leader in sports prescription eyewear. You can find them online at sportrx.com. And don't forget to enter the code DELI10 at checkout for your special 10% discount. A little bit about your hosts today, Hootie Hoot. I coached college basketball for 23 years, 15 on the men's side and 8 on the women. And I now coach at a low-income, first-generation high school girls basketball here in San Diego. I played 4 years of college basketball. I'm a life coach. I have a beautiful daughter. I'm a professional basketball skills trainer. We love to share space with our guests here in the Sports Deli to talk about the intersection between race and sports, mental health and sports, equality, and solutions. We want to help mobilize, listen, learn, and pay it forward. We're so honored that you're joining us today, and we hope that you can grab your favorite deli sandwich or bagel and your favorite beverage, and let's do this together in the Sports Deli. We are so pumped to welcome on this fourth day of Military Appreciation Dental Care Awareness and Correct Your Posture Month and my 92-year-old grandmother's birthday by American table tennis, aka ping pong sensation, Wally Green. He grew up in the Marlboro Projects in Coney Island, Brooklyn, New York, one of the five boroughs in New York City. His upbringing included gang violence, really bad domestic violence, anger, and an abusive family, which he'll talk about later. And by the age of 13, he owned 6 guns and had a gun pointed at his head on the streets of New York. But he eventually swapped pistols for paddles. The name of his new book, at 18 years of age, when he met a sponsor who sent him to Germany. And today you'll hear the rest of the story. He used to make fun of all the kids in high school for playing ping pong. Played a lot of sports growing up, like basketball, volleyball, tennis, wrestling, pool, and football. And lucky number 7 was the charm, as he used his athleticism and personality to become one of the coolest players in the world and an international ping pong phenomenon where even people in North Korea were seeking his autograph. He used to play undercover at the world famous Bryant Park in New York, which was the location of the documentary, The Table, featuring Wally and some other incredible people. And if you have 15 minutes, I encourage you to go and check it out. He uses top-of-the-line paddles, but is pretty good even when he uses his phone as a paddle. He's one of the co-founders of Spin, along with Susan Sarandon. Spin is an international chain of franchised table tennis clubs and bars. And the company was founded in 2009 by Susan and Wally and others. And it's an amazing thing. He'll talk about that later as well. He's been featured in USA Today, the New York Times, Associated Press, ESPN Magazine, The Today Show, ESPN, and Steve Harvey, among many others, domestically and abroad. He walked with Susan Sarandon, the co-founder of Spin, on the red carpet in Shanghai while wearing his Jordans and his chains because Susan said, "Be yourself, don't worry about wearing a tuxedo," while she was earning a Lifetime Achievement Award. He has represented the U.S. in dozens of international pro tour competitions around the globe, from China, one of his favorite places he's ever visited, to North Korea. Yes, North Korea. He's a rapper and a filmmaker. He's working on his documentary, My North Korean Ping Pong Diplomacy, and his autobiography, as I mentioned earlier, From the Pistol to the Paddle, and improving his social media presence. He believes that his life is one big inspirational and motivational movie solely meant to motivate and inspire others, and believes that anyone can create wealth, but it begs the question, what have you done to create history? He's contemplating phasing out Facebook because other social media platforms are proving to be more beneficial. You can find him on Instagram at Wally Green, just like it sounds, New York City, NYC, Wally Green, NYC. And on Clubhouse, if you have Clubhouse, they're rolling out the Android version of the app soon. Wally Green, NYC also. And on TikTok, he's getting more fired up about TikTok. Wally Green, NYC _ and at www.whoiswallygreen.com. Bro, when I heard you on Clubhouse, man, I was like, I got to have this guy, man. Just like when I heard Natty White with her Moolah Kicks, first ever female brand basketball shoes, like Clubhouse has been amazing. I mean, it can get addicting and it can consume you, but you know, but I'm so glad I heard you on there. And I don't even remember what room it was in, but it was just amazing to listen to your story and honored that you're joining us in the Sports Daily today, bro.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Wally G in the house. G Money. What's up, Doug? So, true story. So I had a ping pong table in my basement, right? Back when I was growing up, and me and my friend, we would play for hours. But, you know, back then, it was just more of something we did for fun. You know, we did traditional sports, right? I played five sports in high school. You know, I played basketball and tennis in college. And so, you know, I know you've told the story a lot of times, but it never gets old. You know, I've listened to a couple of podcasts with you on there, and every time I hear it, I shake my head and I'm just like, it's interesting, the irony about how, you know, sometimes life will throw you some curveballs and when you least expect, you know, things to come into your path, if you're just sort of paying attention, you know, they'll be there. And so I don't know if you were paying attention, but it seems like you were just ready for a change. And so talk about, looking back on it now, reflecting back, what are your thoughts about everything and the road less traveled that you took?
Wow. It's been a real interesting journey. I mean, you know, I always remember, you know, where I came from and how I was till today. And it's been, you know, quite the interesting journey. Especially in the fact that I really never given up, because through the whole process of change and getting to where I am now, I definitely ran into a lot of obstacles. And even with the whole ping pong thing, I definitely ran into a lot of obstacles where I could have just said, you know what, screw this, it's not for me, and just quit.
Were these internal struggles that you were having with yourself? Like you're having a monologue with yourself? I can do it. No, I can't. Someone's out to get me. Like you're always on, you know, when you talk about the earlier days in a minute, you know, you're always on guard. Like you know, your fists are always up, like ready for something bad to happen. Cause you know, that's just what you've been used to your whole life. Right.
Right. It was whether or not I could actually do something in my new life, which was the whole ping pong life, because I started playing pro like right away, pretty much. I mean, crazy. There wasn't a lot of time. It was pretty much right away because I was able to get a sponsor to do so. But I sucked. I mean, I was getting killed by everyone. And you know, when you start out and you lose so many matches and you just lose and you're getting killed by everyone, you know, things go through your head like, you know, why are you doing this again? Yeah. Right. But I just always thought I could do it. And you know, I just kept trying, and I was like, I'm gonna do it. And then what I had to do was just, I had to reevaluate what my goals were. That was the biggest problem. I had the wrong, I had unrealistic goals, right? So once I was able to reevaluate what my goals are, and then make, I call them SMART goals, or goals that actually make sense, then I was able to get better and be better. And then I understood, okay, I could do this.
So let me ask you a question, because you played a lot of sports like I did. And do you think that going through those experiences, even though you were in the midst of, you know, living the gang life and, you know, doing some other things that, you know, weren't necessarily, you know, things that you would wish on anyone, but it was just the way that, you know, because of your home life and everything, you just had to go through it. But sports teaches us a lot about ourselves. And do you think that because not only what you had to deal with on the streets, but having to overcome adversity in sports growing up, that you had already, you know, failed in some respects in sports. And so that when ping pong came along, you're like, oh, I'm good. I can get up.
The biggest difference was that when I played other sports, I was really good at them. So when I played volleyball for the first year of my school, I was MVP. Next year, I was MVP. Wrestling, I was MVP. Basketball, I was a star. Every sport I played, and not only that, not only was I really good at these sports, I fit in.
Whereas
ping pong, I didn't fit in at all, right. Like zero. I didn't fit in at all. and I wasn't good. So that made it a little bit harder, you know. And then, you know, you would get the occasion. Like, I had a conversation one time. I never forget this conversation with another kid. And I think this had been, I've been playing for a year maybe, and I didn't win a match, and I was getting just beaten, but not, I was getting better as I went along, but it had been a year or maybe less than a year. And a kid came up to me and he said, "Hey, oh, I know you, you're that guy from New York." He goes, "Why do you keep playing if you keep losing?" That's what he told me. I wanted to punch him in the face, but that was the first thing. But I told him, I said, "Let me ask you a question." I said, "How many times since you've been playing the sport have you come in first place?" And he said, "Never." I said, "How many times have you come in second place?" He said, "Never." I said, "How many times you came in third place?" He said, "Never." I said, "Well, then maybe you should think about your question before you ask me that question."
That's right.
Yeah. I just flipped it around on you, but yeah.
That's good. I like that. So one thing I thought about was, how many times growing up were you in spaces where you were the only African-American besides ping pong?
Besides ping pong?
Before ping pong. Was it mostly you were just around your people?
Yeah. It's just mostly. I never been outside of my circle.
I got you. So the reason I ask that is because a lot of the things that we talk about on the show, as you know, have to do with, you know, some of the things that have been going on in the last year in particular, but obviously that have been going on for hundreds of years. And so I'm wondering, besides the irony of making fun of the Asian community and the kids in your high school and now you're actually playing the sport, did you have like double anxiety? Because not only are you playing a sport that you know you're not good at and you've always been good at sports, but now you're the only African-American and you know people, you've heard stories where people are always looking at you, staring at you, you know.
Oh, yeah.
At what point did people make you feel welcome?
I mean, when I first started playing pro, people were definitely always looking at me, staring at me because
with your hair and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I came with this crazy hairstyle and they were like, "Whoa, what's that?" And then not only that, like I brought a lot of the hood into table tennis.
I love it.
So when I would be playing, I was very vocal and I was like, "Yeah, come on." And the funniest thing is, you know, the points go to 11 points, right? And I could be losing. I would be losing, let's say it would be 10-0. And I would make that 1 point and I would go, "Yeah, that's it, baby. Come on." And I bring the crazy. So everybody was always staring at me, like all the time. Like people were just always like staring at me and wondering like, you know, who is this dude? You know, where is he from? then I also didn't dress the ping pong right?
Yeah.
So I would go to tournaments. Now I have my chain on, little bling chain on.
I love it.
You know, I have my hat on, I have my crazy hair. I would have sunglasses indoors. So yeah, people were always looking at me.
That is classic. I freaking love it. Trash talking and ping pong. It's freaking great. Do you still talk to the people that you grew up with?
No.
You left now, the circle completely.
Yeah. I mean, now, I'm kind of like in touch with one of them now because my stepbrother passed away.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Like a couple of days ago. So, So now I'm in touch with one particular person who I wasn't really in touch with so much, but now, you know, we started to talk a little bit, you know, stuff like that.
So one of my friends works in the juvenile system and he's been doing it for nearly 20 years. And we had a pretty interesting conversation a couple weeks ago. And I play college basketball with him. He's a Division I official basketball referee. He's coaching the pro-ams with Matt Barnes and, you know, a lot of these guys that are doing, you know, really well now, former NBA players. And he said something interesting to me, which, you know, I'm not in that system, so I don't really know. And the reason I ask this question is because I'm wondering if you're giving back in that area that took you down that road. either that or, you know, things that have to do with domestic violence or, you know, helping people that have to face some of the things that are out of their control. But he said that if you don't get a hold of them at a really young age, that it's really difficult to change their outlook on life, because like you, that's all they know and they're not going to survive any other way. So, you know, looking back on that part of it, obviously you had an out, but do you go back and talk to the kids now and just say, hey, you know, there's other ways to, because the other thing we've talked about on the show is that African-Americans, the Black and Brown community have to, they have to be examples, not just with sports, but as artists and in every capacity, so that the new generation sees, you know, that it doesn't have to just be sports. So, but what comes to mind when I ask you that question about giving back and you know, those types of things?
So one of the things that I like to do is I like talking to schools. So since we made that film, the Tables, I've traveled all over the country and I would go to schools and talk about gun violence and gangs and just try to, you know, answer questions for kids, because kids have a lot of questions and they're really smart. They're really smart. And they're really smart questions. And even just last week, I was in Tampa and I went to go do a podcast in Tampa, and there was a Boys and Girls Club there. And they asked me, oh, would I come by? And I went by and I spoke to the boys and girls there. And you could see like wow. I could feel like they saw themselves in me, and I saw myself in them, and just talking to them and being really transparent and open with them. You know, I love doing it, because it definitely helps, because, you know, a lot of times when you grow up in this situation, you don't know any option unless it's shown to you, right? And if the option is not shown to you, you only know what you see, and that's what's in your neighborhood. So, you know, I'm pretty happy that I went through what I went through, so that I can share with these kids as well, and they can, you know, think of a better future than what they're going through.
Yeah, it's tough, because they just like you, they see it every day. So, you know, one talk isn't necessarily going to, you know, change their perspectives. But if there's programs available after school, and there's sports, or there's art programs, you know, there's money injected into these neighborhoods, into these schools. My grandfather used to say this all the time, that there's not enough money in these communities to, you know, offer programming amongst all the other issues, you know, education and opportunities and, you know, all the other systemic racism, racist things that, you know, we have to deal with. But for the kids, you know, to feel like they have hope, you know, we gotta have people like you and you know, resources available to them. So excited to be supporting Moolah Kicks. They are the first female-only brand basketball shoe, and you can find them online at Moolah is M-O-O-L-A-H, Kicks, like shoes, K-I-C-K-S, plural, MoolahKicks.com. Now back to this incredible interview right here in the Sports Deli. All right, so let's fast forward a little bit. If you want to, you know, talk anything about, you know, your upbringing, we'd love to hear about it. But I'm interested just in how, you know, you go from, you know, a little bit of luck, right? We all need a little bit of luck, whether it's in sports or anything else, to all these opportunities and what you've been doing really since then, besides traveling the world. You know, recently, what have you been doing, and, you know, where you see yourself, you know, sort of in the next 5 to 10 years and in that phase of your life?
So recently now I'm focused on my film. I'm focused on writing my book. Yeah. And then also, you know, we have the club with the pandemic now. Things are reopening slowly. Yeah. But they're looking pretty good right now. Yeah. So focusing on the club and just, you know, giving everybody that great space, you know, to come and vibe and have a good time through the sport that I love so much. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what's going on right now.
That's cool. And you're writing your book.
Yeah, that's the hard thing, because I actually don't like writing. I really hate writing. Actually, I have no I really just don't like to write. I never did.
Audio dictation, bro.
I've been doing a little bit of that, but then I realized that it was easier for me to collect my thoughts in a chain when I wrote it down. Like I tried the audio thing, and the audio thing, I don't know. I didn't
wasn't
feel like
flowing
I was
writing. The same way.
Mm. Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It wasn't flowing. It was very, very different.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I'm also kind of all tired out of writing. Like I wrote an article about maybe, I don't know how long, it's been maybe a year now. And it talks about my life briefly going to North Korea and doing all this stuff in North Korea. Mm. And somebody convinced me, I actually didn't want to write it. And someone says, no, you got to write this thing. You got to write it. It's so good. And I say, yeah, he writes, just write a little bit. So I wrote a little bit every day in my phone in notes. And it took me, I don't know, it took me a very long, it took me like, I want to say 4 or 5 months to write this article. But I was able to get a 4-page spread in the New York Daily News. Wow. You know, so, which is crazy because people just, first of all, it's hard to get anything in there. And if you do, it's like a little thing, but I got a 4-page spread, you know, about my article. And so after that, I was like, oh my God, I don't want to write anymore. You know, I was like, I can't write anymore. It was a lot. Like for me, it was a lot.
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of energy. My mom just finished writing her book. She's been a psychotherapist for 40 years, and it took her a decade to write it. It takes time. It's exhausting.
Yes.
You know, and you want to make sure that, you know, it flows properly, like you said. So people that don't know the story, tell them exactly, you know, how you went, you know, from the streets to table tennis or ping pong. You know, some people don't really call it ping pong, but you're cool with it, right? You know,
that's my favorite word for it.
Exactly. Oh. So tell everybody a little bit about how it went when you were hustling, you know, playing pool and you broke your pool stick. And then, you know, let's hear the rest of the story.
Oh yeah. So, you know, I was off season playing sports and I was looking for something else to do. And I found pool and I was actually pretty good at it. I went to go buy a pool stick. And the first time I went to buy one, they had a cheaper one and I had some cash. I paid for that cheaper one. Right. But then I noticed that there was some more expensive ones. So I went back the next day and said, hey, I don't like this pool stick. And the guy said, well, you can change it for any of the ones over there in the box. Right. But there was some on a rack that had like these price tags on them. So I took one from the rack, took the tag off and put it on the one that I had. I mean, I don't know if that's stealing. Maybe it is. But yeah, but I mean, it was an unfair trade. I wouldn't say it was stealing. I unfairly traded it. So now I had a really good stick, which, you know, I thought the good stick would make me a good player. And so, because I was good, I wasn't bad. I could shoot.
Yeah.
But the stick just made me feel powerful. Like I was the man.
So this story is about karma.
Yeah. Karma. Exactly. So I went to the pool hall and, played some guys for some money, got hustled, lost the money, was really pissed off, took the pool stick, smashed it on the table, and it shattered, right? Anger management 101.
That's crazy.
And then I was so pissed off. Now I wanted something to do, and I saw some kids playing ping pong. They had like 2 ping pong tables. And so I looked over, and I think I went over there more as a bully because it was a sport that I hated. I didn't like this sport. And I went over there to be a bully. So I went over there and says, hey, I want to get a hit. And they said, okay. So they gave me the racket. And out of anger, I just hit the ball and it went on the table. It's like pure luck. Just out of anger, you know, it went on the table. And the guy was like, oh my God, you know, do you play this? And I was like, no, I don't play this. And he goes, oh, there's a club that you can go to where people play. And I was like, what? There's a club for this sport? You got to be kidding me. I can't even call it a sport then. I was like, there's a club for this? Right, I said, exactly. No way to cope with this. But, you know, I was still interested to see that if there was really a club for this, you know. And so I went down and to go check it out. And people were playing. Like, they were standing back from the table, making noise and boom, boom. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy, right? And then, you know, I was really wanted to play. And at the time, nobody would play with me, right? And I was getting a little bit upset. You know, because people were just kind of like, I found it kind of disrespectful. because, you know, I knew the kind of gangster that I was. And if I want to do something, you should do it with me. That was my mentality. But nobody would play with me. So
was it just, because you weren't good, or because you were African American?
Because they didn't know me.
Because they didn't know you. I got you. Okay.
They, you know, it, the sport is very clicky. So
I got you.
So people tend to play with people they know because they know that person's good.
Got you.
Right. So eventually this old guy came and played with me a couple of times, and he would destroy me. Like, the dude was like 60s, like destroy me. And I think that's what made me want to play more, because I was like, there's no way that this dude in this age can beat me. I'm a basketball player. I'm a wrestler. I'm a football player.
Right, exactly.
It's crazy. It's not even making sense right now. I want to play this sport. And then eventually, you know, I didn't have a consistent partner. And one day this guy comes to me, he goes, hey, do you have a partner? And I'm like, no. He was like, hey, I'll pay you $20 every time you play with me. I was like, whoa, what? $20? These guys gave me $20. I was like, yeah, that's a hustle, man, for sure. Do it. $20 just to hit with you. I mean, I suck, but I could hit the ball, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I hit with this guy. He paid me $20 cash all the time. It was like the greatest hustle ever. I mean, I'm getting paid just to play ping pong was crazy. And me and the guy, we got pretty close, and we would talk a little bit, and I would tell him about what was going on in the house, and you know, the things I did. Like, I was hanging out with my gang and stuff like that, and just stuff like that. And then for him, it was more like a TV show, right? Because like I always say, if you don't know anyone who's lived that life or you've never been in it, yeah, it's TV. It's all TV and movies. And then one day I went to the club, and gun fell out of my bag, and he saw it. And he had this crazy look on his face, and I wasn't trying to stay around to see what that crazy look meant. So I picked it up and I was like, yo, I'm out. And I just left. And first thing I thought was, damn, my $20 is gone. That's it. I only thought about the 20. The 20 is gone. I was like, damn, it's messed up. And then he called me 2 days later, and he was like, hey, are we still playing? I was like, what? All right. I was like, yeah, $20, you know, for sure.
Yep.
So I go down, I play with him. And then he says he wants to invite me to his family's house, right? He had a house that was like 2.5 hours away from New York City, wow, near Hunter. And I was like, what? So for me, it was kind of weird, right? Because, you know, I come from a place where people don't do stuff for free.
He's white?
Yeah, he was Israeli.
Oh, he's Israeli. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and people don't do stuff for free. Like, why you want to bring me to your house? Like, wow. for what? You know, that was in my head, right? But my mind is on the $20. So if I need to go to your house, go to your family, $20, let's go.
Have some grub too?
Yeah, I went to meet his family, and wow, you know, I think he was trying to give me a sense of what a real family is supposed to be like, because they were very family-like, like really wow, family, like it was really, really family-like. And
wow.
So then at a later time, he tells me, says, listen, I know that you're very interested in ping pong, which I was because once I started playing, you know, every little thing that you do makes a big difference and it becomes addictive.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I was
yeah,
like, oh my God, this is crazy. And so he said, listen, I want to pay for you to go to Germany, because I have a connection at a sports school, and I want to pay for you to go to Germany to learn ping pong. And I was like, what? And at first I was thinking, all right, this is weird.
Looking over your shoulder, like.
Yeah, this dude wants to pay for me to go to Germany to learn ping pong. And the only thing I knew about Germany then was Hitler. I didn't right, know anything about Germany. Like, what are you trying to take me to Germany for? But, you know, I was always a person that took opportunity when it came.
Yeah.
I'm still like that till today. And, wow, and I said, all right, you know, let's just do it. And that's how I started ping pong. That was the start. I went to Germany. Crazy. Yeah. And lived with these kids. And yeah, that was how it started.
Wow, man. That is just talk about the fact that you, you know, thought you were going to be playing pool. And then you're playing ping pong and now you're in Germany. That's just, I know you've told the story a million times, but to me, it's just, and the people listening to it for the first time are probably just like, wow, that's just crazy. CityLokes.com, where you can get your own personalized hats and phone cases, tees, accessories, and much, much more. I ordered 2 hats and they're amazing. One of them says the Sports Deli, and it has a California license plate, and the other one has a Michigan license plate and says Speak Up and Dribble, Black Lives Matter. So check them out at citylokes.com, and don't forget to enter the code THESPORTSDELI at checkout for your special 10% discount. And now back to this incredible interview right here in the Sports Deli. So talk about some of your favorite moments. So you represented the United States eventually, right? And so you traveled all over the place, and from North Korea, you and Dennis Rodman, not at the same time, you and Dennis Rodman. The story going there was a little bit scary too, right? In terms of getting your visa. Like, I remember I had to help somebody get a visa for Spain, and it was nothing like what you've described in some previous podcasts. Like that was a little nerve wracking to have to give up your passport.
Yeah, it was a really interesting, I don't even know what to call it. I remember when—
Leap of faith.
Yeah, definitely, like for real, because you know, and the reason why it was such a leap of faith is because I already had an issue already, which you probably didn't know about. So I already lost my passport twice. Yeah, so a lot of people don't know this. If you lose your passport a certain amount of time, I think it's two times or three times. It's two times. Yeah, it's two times. Two times in 1 year, in a period of 5 years, I think, or something like this. Don't mark me on this, but it's a certain amount of times in a year. Right. You cannot get a passport in whatever country you are. So let's say you're in China. If you lose your passport in China, you go to American Embassy, and they will print a passport for you. If you had, like, which happened to me, because I already lost my passport, so I already had the issue happen already in China, where they say, hey, we can't give you a passport. Your passport has to come from America, because it showed in the computer lost it. So they think that you're selling it.
Right,
so I had this problem with my passport. So after I had to wait, like, it was supposed to be almost 3 or 4 weeks. But luckily, I knew someone who had some connection to Hillary Clinton, and that's how
crazy.
That's how I got my passport in 1 week in China. Yeah, so I got really lucky, and
good old Hillary.
Yeah, so I got really lucky with the political connection. Through a friend, but otherwise I would have been there. So being that this already happened, when the guy asked me, you know, to give him my passport. So for those who don't know the story, I had to go to Beijing to get the visa for my passport. So I had to go to Beijing, and the guys, I spoke to someone. He says, just come by the embassy. So I go by the embassy, and there's no entrance to the embassy. And every embassy in the world, you know, there's a big glass door. It says whatever the country embassy is, and it's like a welcoming door to come in, not the North Korean one in China. There's nothing. And, and I had this electric wheel. I had an electric wheel that I ride around.
Yeah.
And I rode around the whole compound twice, and I could not find a door. So I called the guy and says, hey, I'm here, but there's no entrance. And the guy's like, okay, oh, just wait for me. I'm going to come out, right? So I'm standing by some door. I don't know. It was like the back door of like some place that kind of staff were coming out of. Crazy. And crazy. I was trying to stand there, and the soldier told me I had to move. They wouldn't let me stand there. So I had to go across the street. So I went across the street and you know, I waited for the guy. And I see the guy comes out. Now I'm thinking the guy's coming out because he's going to bring me in so that I can get my visa. No, that's not the case. He comes to me, goes, hi, I'm Mr. Green. I'm so from the consulate. Can I have your passport? I'm like, what? I can't give you my passport. I see, there's no way. He was like, no. You need to give the passport because I have to go and, you know, make the visa and bring it back. And I was like, yeah, but I can't give you my passport because I'm already thinking now if something goes wrong, the government is not going to hear that I lost my passport again. I probably will not be able to fly anymore. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's not going to be good. So, I really wanted to do this whole North Korea thing. So what I did was I took my phone, I took a picture of him without him knowing, and then gave him my password. So at least if anything came down, I could say,
smart.
No. Yeah. So he told me he'll be back in an hour. I come back in an hour. And now just think about this scene. I mean, because if you think about how this scene goes down, it's really crazy. you know, you got a black dude, right? You got an Asian dude across the street from the North Korean embassy, and I'm handing this guy cash, and he's handing me a passport. I mean, it just looks so wrong in every meaning of the word wrong. But yeah, that was how I got the visa. It was
that's crazy.
Mind-boggling. But yeah, I mean, I did get the visa, and I was able to go. So yeah.
Well, and you're also worried because you can't lose another passport. Oh. Whether you lose it or they steal it, no. You're done.
Listen, everywhere I go now, you know that little safe that they have in the hotel?
Yep.
Where my passport goes, I never use that safe before. Right. Now, every time, the first thing I do, doesn't matter where I go, if I have my passport on me, it goes right in that safe.
That's crazy. So mind-blowing. So talk about the North Korean experience, because nobody wanted to go with you, right?
Oh, yeah.
You basically went alone.
Yeah, I tried to contact everyone in the world, like all my friends. Hey, let's go do this North Korean, this ping pong diplomacy. You know, in 1971, a bit of American history, is called the ping pong diplomacy. And it's when Nixon was the president, America established relations with China through ping pong. Hence, you got the movie Forrest Gump. So Forrest Gump is basically about that ping pong diplomacy.
Wow.
So I wanted to do my own ping pong diplomacy. I thought it'd be cool. I thought everyone else would want to do something like that. But no, people were like, you're going to die. You're not going to come back. They're going to kidnap you. You know, your life is going to end. And all these crazy things people were saying. So I said, all right, you know what? If you guys don't want to go, I'll go by myself. Right. Because I mean, I wasn't afraid. I mean, the stuff that I've been through growing up as a kid was way more dangerous than any North Korean trip. Right. Yeah. But I technically at the time didn't realize how dangerous it was.
Yeah.
I mean, probably equal in danger. But nobody wanted to go. So I said, I'm going to go by myself. And then, you know, Dennis Rodman had recently came back. So I said, hey, if this guy came back, then I could come back. You know,
that's right.
So he was actually a huge motivation. Really, one of the biggest motivations for me actually going through with it. Because let's say if something happened to him, then I definitely wasn't going. I think that trip would have been squashed. But sure. Because he was a person of color, and we're similar in ways that our hair is crazy, I felt connected to him. And I said, okay, he came back and he was like, yeah, he had a great time. I mean, I didn't have that kind of great time, but he had a great time. You know, I felt like, yeah, I could do this. I'm going to do it. And so I did it. I went just by myself.
That's amazing. So when you go all over the world, have you heard anyone use racial slurs or?
Yeah. Yeah. Many times, like in different countries. I remember one particular one that I remember, and if I remember correctly, I was in Croatia. I think I was in Croatia, and I was with my German friend actually. And there's two funny situations that happened. Well, one wasn't so funny, but the first one was funny. I'll tell you the first one first. The first situation, I was walking with a friend of mine, the table tennis player, this girl who's from Croatia, and she was showing me through the city. So we were walking through the city, and as we're walking, there's some guys across, like some skinhead looking guys across, right? And they do this.
Oh Lord.
So you
just put your hand up like Hitler, right?
Yeah. So that, yeah. Okay. So they do that. But
God bless.
You know, I never experienced that kind of stuff, right? So I'm thinking they're saying what's up. So I raised my hand. I'm like, yo, what's up? And the girl's like, no.
Oh my God.
Don't do that. I'm like, what? She said, no, those are Nazis. You can't do that.
Oh my God.
And then she explained to me that she had gotten beat up because she's Croatian, but she's a little bit tan, a little darker because of her color. And I was like, no way. I was like, really, this is going on? And then another situation, I was coming out of a bar with my German friend. And as I was coming out, one of the guys who was going in told me, he said, go back home, with the N-word to me.
Wow.
And I just like, my eyes went big, and my friend just grabbed me. He's like, no, he's like, just go, let's go. Just let's go. Because my friend said, you would get killed here. Like, it, you just go. So I've experienced, you know, like that kind of stuff, you know, as well as more of the lighter stuff, which is more of the ignorant stuff.
Yeah.
Not really the very racist stuff, but just the kind of ignorant stuff. Like, for example, in China, one time I was in the countryside and someone comes to shake my hand. And then they look at their hand to see if, like,
the black hand. Oh my god!
So I've been in a lot of situations at that level, like those kind of, just not really racism stuff. Like, I don't get angry about it; it just makes me laugh. But more ignorant kind of stuff, you know, which I always say, if it's not checked, leads to racism. So I usually check people and say, no, you know. Black people's hands, the black doesn't come off, doesn't work like that, you know, stuff like that.
Oh my God, that's crazy. You know, and it's cool, there's so many different ways and so many layers to break those barriers.
Yeah.
And, you know, get people to see who you are, what your true identity really is, that, you know, you're just like them, there's more similarities than differences. And that's the whole implicit bias, right? That whole,
right.
You know, systemic racism piece that
people
are so uncomfortable, you know, having conversations, being around people that don't look like them. And, you know, you can sort of relate, right? Because you're the one that's been in those spaces. And so, you know, it's, most of the time it's safe. But, you know, I applaud you for, you know, getting people to see, you know, the things that you have, because I think it's really important in multitude of different ways that people normalize equality, because people run away from it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't think it's real. They don't think they're part of the problem. You know, white privilege, right? So there's all these layers. And so you're doing it in a way that we haven't heard on this show before, which is fascinating. And when I saw you hug the guy from North Korea after you lost, and like, to talk about like what compelled you to not shake his hand, but just grab him and give him a bear hug. The crowd went crazy, right?
So I mean, look,
this is North Korea, man. This is North Korea. Yeah. This is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, the whole reason I went there was to do a diplomacy for world peace. I wanted to make a difference, right? I didn't have a plan. I had no plan, had no idea. How was I going to make this difference, right? Because, you know, it was crazy in the news, you know, Americans are the devil, we're evil and this and that and all this craziness. And I didn't know how it could make a difference. But when I started playing the match against this North Korean, which I was lucky to get to play against, you know, I went up 5-0 quickly. And if you remember in the video, you hear some sound. I don't even remember that sound. You're going, this weird sound. Like, it was like the craziest sound of disapproval. Like, they all hated me. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And but at one point, I look up and I start smiling, right? Because when he started making points, he started clapping. And it started getting loud. And I was getting rattled. Like, inside, I was like, yo, this is crazy. And then I look up, I start smiling, and everyone started smiling.
Like 5,000 right? people, right?
Yes. So now I made this chain reaction of people connecting. We're connecting with each other. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. Okay. So this is how I'm going to make the difference. This is right here. This is the opportunity, because now I got a contact with these fans that are watching the sport. And so, you know, I would look up from time to time. I didn't care about the match anymore. And they would smile with me. I laugh, they laugh, I smile, they smile. And it was a chain reaction. And then at the end, you know, I wind up losing the match, of course. And the guy comes to shake my hand. And you can tell, like, he doesn't want to shake my hand, right? Because you don't want to shake the hand of the devil, of the evil person. You know, you don't want to shake that person's hand. So he comes up to me, he puts his hand out, and it's sort of like one of those touch, like not even like a handshake, like tries to touch my hand, like barely touch it. And I just grabbed him, pulled him in, and gave him the biggest hug he's ever had in his life.
That's
like
crazy.
Just hugged him. And you know, my camera is facing my back, which is his front.
Right.
So you can see his face at first was like, whoa. But then he smiles, right? He gets this smile. And, wow. and that smile, you can't fake that. You can't make that up. That's real. That's wow. a real person. You know, the insides of a real person
yeah.
came out, right? And I mean, I was just like, whoa, this is nuts. And the crowd's cheering. And you know, I always say this, that you just mentioned it before as well. You cannot change someone overnight. It doesn't happen. Yeah. But what you can do is plant the seed, right? You plant the seed and now this person has to think about, whoa, you know what? Maybe Americans are not so bad. And for the rest of his life, right? For the rest of this guy's life, he will never forget the day that this Black dude from America with crazy hair came and gave him the biggest hug, showed him nothing but love. And all those fans also will never, ever, ever forget. There's no way they can forget it, right? Because there's no one like me that yeah. has been in their presence. So the next time maybe the government says some crazy things about Americans, someone might say, well, you know what? I remember that guy, he came and gave, you know, our guy a big hug, right? So yeah, I mean, it was definitely incredible.
That's awesome. One of the things that's been a byproduct of all this that's been really important to me as a dad is to see my daughter, who has white privilege, understand the depths of systemic racism. And so you were just talking about, tell us what happened when you posted something on social media.
Yeah, so I started this TikTok page about 2 months ago, and one of the posts that I posted went viral, and it was a post about the whole Asian hate thing that was going on, because I had seen some videos and I was like, whoa, that's crazy, you know, as well. So I got to talk about this, and I was very passionate about the post, and so it went viral. But what came with going viral was very ugly, and I didn't realize that in this day and age that the ignorance and the racism is so high, and the thing that makes it crazy, it's not even on one side, it's on all sides, and that's what made me, like, I was like, this is nuts. So I felt responsible because I made this post,
and what did
I
you put say?
So I was talking about how Asians are not the virus, because people were trying to
blame it on that.
They were attacking Asians
yeah.
because of the virus. And my point was, they're not the virus. And I was very, very passionate, strong about what I said. And, you know, and because I made this kind of post, I feel responsible for this post, because everybody says, you don't need to answer the comments, just post the thing. And I said, No, that's not how it works. You know, I made this. I started this post. I need to answer every comment, especially the very ignorant ones. So
wow.
I've answered all comments. I think there's over 7,000 comments, and every oh, one wow. of them is answered, especially the ignorant ones. Because I always say like this, this is really important. Racism starts out as ignorance. It's mm-hmm. ignorance first. It's mm-hmm. not liking someone because of what you think. You don't know the real thing, but you have an idea, you heard. That's ignorance. Racism is straight out not liking someone because of their race, of their color, no matter what you heard, right? So I always say that in order to stop racism, you need to stop it at ignorance. So all those people that are in the app, you know, and they say some crazy things. It's like, for example, I give an example of things that they say. So from my own people's side, they would say, oh, I don't understand why you're sticking up for Asians, for, you know, it started in China, so Asians are the virus. And then I would check people, and I check people really hard. You know, I go in and I'm like, listen, don't be an ignorant fool. I said, let me school you on something. I said, China is in Asia. Asia is a continent. It's not a country. So are you saying Asians because of China? It doesn't make any sense, right? And then I would get stuff also from the Asian side saying stuff like this. And this is a lot of it. Like at one point I was so stressed out. Like everyone saw, I didn't get sleep. I was just mentally drained. Wow. Because on the other side, it would say, oh, we supported the BLM, and this is what you guys do to us. And so now I got to go check that comment immediately. I got it, because you know what happens if you don't check a comment? If you don't check a comment, another comment will come, and it becomes this whole race war on your page. So I checked that comment too and says, hey, listen, BLM has nothing to do with what happened. All right. I'm Black, right? But I'm supporting you. So what you're saying doesn't make sense. So, you know, I always say that you know, racism, the ignorance has to be checked. I want to give you one more example too.
Yeah.
So I'm scrolling through the TikTok pages, and then I see, you know, a Black girl, and she's really, really angry, really pissed off. And she's like, yeah, you see, you know, you see what these white people do, blah, blah, blah. They're so racist, blah, blah. And she was referring to a video that a girl in Bulgaria posted. And what the video was, the girl painted her face Black, and she did Michael Jackson song, she did Diana Ross song, she did even the Stevie Wonder thing, right? And the Black girl was really pissed off about it. So I saw it and I understood it, because I've traveled to every major country in the world and I've dealt with all kinds of ignorance, right? And a lot of times the things that you think are racist aren't really racist, right? But it's your job to, I tell people, it's your job to check people. If you don't check people, then there's no way they can know. So for example, the girl in Bulgaria has no idea what blackface is. She's never even heard of that. If you really a fan of someone, what do? You try to be like them, right? So that's what she was doing. And I reached out to this girl in the DMs and I said, listen, let me talk to you. What you think is happening is not what's happening. She's just honoring our culture. But instead of getting angry and getting crazy about it, it's your job to check her. Is she racist? No. Is she ignorant? Yes. So it's your job to reach out to her and say, hey, you know, I understand what you're saying, but you shouldn't do that, because. So now you've checked her, you've educated her. And now she understands that, oh, wow, what I did looks really bad. Okay, I won't do that again. So I always say that ignorance just needs to be checked, man. And it's that's the only way racism is going to stop. All ignorance has to be checked before it grows to racism.
Interesting. And I agree with you. It reminds me, I'll let you go, of Ryan Harris, Super Bowl champion, was on the show. And he said he's Muslim. And, you know, he just talked about studying different faiths. And it reminds me of Coach Wooden from UCLA at 99 years old. He was taking a deep dive into religions and trying to find the common theme with all the religions, you know, because it was just something that was important to him. And what Ryan said was, when someone's racist, he doesn't shake his head. He says, oh, wow, that's interesting. I want to know why. And so that shift of a paradigm allows him to channel his anger or channel his sadness or channel his disappointment or head shaking into something educational, into something with a purpose, so that, you know, like you just explained, it's 7,000 messages and it's exhausting and it can cause you to lose sleep, but it's worth it.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. Would I do it all again? Yep. Because
amazing.
One thing that I didn't mention is that, you know, every person that I schooled, and it's a ton of them, nobody never came back at me incorrectly, because I'm very firm. Like I tell people, I'm like, you're being an effing idiot right now. Look, and I'm really hard. And then I always end it with, I appreciate you. So after I've schooled them and given them an ass whipping, then I say, I appreciate you. And not one person has ever on that app came back and started talking, running their mouth.
They can't say anything at that point. They can't say, you've educated them. It's not just like talking shit. It's just, you know, you said, hey, these are the facts, bro, or sister, or whatever.
And I always end it with, I appreciate you. And everybody's been cool since then. But it was, like I said,
amazing.
It was mentally that 2 weeks was really mentally draining. Like I was, people were like, yo, you okay? And I was like, yeah, it's just these. You know, every time you read stuff like that, even if you say that, oh, I'm not gonna let it bother me, it's in your head. You like, you've read it, it's there. So even without you know it subconsciously, it is bothering you. So all those comments were just like, oh, it was crazy. But well, not only
do you have to live with this every time you walk out of your house, but now there's this unwritten rule of responsibility that you have to educate people.
Yeah.
That's another level of exhaustion, when really it should be white people that should be doing the work to figure out why this has been going on for so long. And we're a bigger reason why this narrative needs to be changed. So, you know, I applaud you for all your efforts, because it's got to be just absolutely exhausting, among other things.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
All right, I'm glad we got to add this into it, and I'll put it in. Yeah, it's a great story, and just real life, real talk, man. It's just it's important stuff for people to hear. Yeah.
So we're so excited to be supporting PSK Collective. Be inspired in PSK, where their clothing line promotes inclusivity, empowerment, and equality by supporting female athletes. You can find them online at pskcollective.com or at walmart.com. And you can now find them at Kohl's, K-O-H-L-S, Kohl's.com. And now back to this incredible interview right here in the Sports Deli.
So one of the questions that somebody asked couple shows ago, we had a guest host on, Rashawn McCloud, who played in the NBA. And so he was asking Jelani McCoy a question about music. And I know music's important to you. And so was it a big escape for you? It was big for me. Like, I was integrated in fifth grade, and then music just was, you know, Cool Moe Dee and LL and Run and Fat Boys. And, you know, and then we sort of, you know, built our way from there, you know, Curtis Blow and all those guys. And it was just something that became a part of what we did on the weekends, and, you know, rap. And so how obviously you rap and music's a big part of your life, you know, so talk about how much it means to you even now, and how it helped you back when you were in your younger days.
I think like music was everything. I mean, it, you know, I was an angry kid. So even though I listened to angry music, it kind of like calmed me down a little bit, because that's
what would you listen to?
Oh, like people like Onyx.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like just really, yeah. I like really hard, crazy, just music.
Yeah.
But I think that listening to that hard, crazy stuff, got rid of the hard mental energy. Because I had a lot of angry mental energy. And when you listen to that music, you're like, yeah, you know, doing that stuff, that actually energy comes out of you.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, having music made me think more in terms of doing the wrong stuff that I was about to do. So it made me think a little bit more. Wow. I think music is responsible for that, because I never, you know, I never really got caught for anything. I was always smart. I was always thinking. I was always just like on point. And I think that came from music.
Wow. Fascinating. So who do you like to listen to now?
Now I don't have a favorite anymore. I think now I can listen to anything. Like, it doesn't matter. Now I'm at the point I can listen to anything. As long as it's good, I can listen to it. A lot of the new rap stuff is just kind of noisy to me.
Yeah.
But, but if it's good, I'll listen to it.
You know, can you bust a rhyme for us real quick?
What kind of rhyme you want?
I don't care.
Oh, bust, I can. Rhyme. Oh, man. Oh, man. I can. Damn. Actually, I want to bust. I do want to bust something for you. And so I'm gonna tell you a little bit about this, because as I said, music is really important for me. And during the pandemic, like the height of the pandemic, I was really stressed. I was like really stressed out, because here's a person that I'm busy every day, all day. I got something going on. And I went to not having nothing going on, like zero. And I was really stressed out. And then I just started thinking about everything that I hated, or everything that was just bothering me, things that I didn't like. Wow. And so I wrote something about it. So for everyone listening, as when I posted this before, I always said, you know, sorry about the curse words and stuff, but if I write something, I got to write it exactly the way I feel it at the time, or else I'm just kind of like not really saying what I feel. So I'm going to bust that for you.
All right, let's do it. You need a beat or no?
Right. No, just straight a cappella.
All right, let's go.
All right. He goes, I'm sick of the bullshit. I'm sick of the fake ones. I'm sick of niggas talking shit. See that bullet, you're going to take one. I'm sick of the lazies. I'm sick of the crazies. I'm sick of these dumbass motherfuckers who never cease to amaze me. I'm sick of this world that we live in. I'm sick of people always taking shit and never think to be giving. I'm sick of this president. He's got a country divide. And I'm sick of all these useless politicians sitting there feeding us fucking lies. I'm sick of wars, better yet, oil money. I'm sick of paying all these useless taxes. They just want to take all our money. I'm sick of censorship, because we all got a voice, and I'm sick of dumb rappers like Kanye, dumbass. 400 years was a choice? Please, I'm sick of stupidity. I'm sick of cluelessness. Every time I show Harriet Tubman's face, motherfuckers, they go, who is this? I'm sick of this virus. And I'm feeling the cries of the sons and daughters and brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers, because just too many have died. And that was my COVID-19 rant that had me struck out.
Man, that was fire, yo, for real.
Thanks, man. That I think if awesome. I didn't write this, I probably would have been banging my head against the wall or something.
Man. Like
this is my release.
That's freaking great. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, well, I mean, that's pretty much why, you know, we started talking sports initially with this podcast, and then George Floyd, and I don't know what it was about him, but it shifted the narrative with, you know, mental health and the divide that you talked about, you know, in your rap. And you know, to keep this conversation going, I talked to an NFL coach today. Mm-hmm. And he, on some level, he's disheartened because, you know, he knows that there's more white people talking about this stuff. There's more outspokenness, but at the same time, you know, it just takes time, like you said, to change these narratives and to change policy and to change how people see things. And some people are never going to change at all, you know, and we just have to, you know, we just sort of have to leave them by the wayside and do our best to get a hold of those people that are somewhere in the middle and just educate them a little bit. So
I'm glad
we're on hopefully the tail end of things. And, you know, your story is just so inspirational. I hope you keep talking to the kids. I hope that you continue to honor your own spirit. And like you said, you know, you can't write anything that's not exactly the way that you're feeling. And I hope that you do the same thing every day when you wake up, that you follow your inner voice and your compass, because usually it guides you. It's the people that ignore it or don't pay attention to it or are in denial about it. That live that lie until they're ready to not live that lie anymore, you know? Yeah. So I applaud you for that. So, all right, let's get to the rapid fire, because this will be fun. Finish the show. Okay, you ready? So, yeah, all right, so. Buckle your seatbelt, call it this or that. Could I get a point off of you, you think?
Ping pong point?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. 1 point, yes.
Probably only because you have one of those metal nets, right? And you might hit the
park.
That's in the park. That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
But if I'm serving the ball all the time, then no.
Forget it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you still switch every 5 points, right?
Every two.
Oh, every two when you play to 11.
11 point game now. Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. Man, I miss ping pong. All right. Favorite part of Brooklyn?
Favorite part of Brooklyn. That's Coney Island for sure.
Did you like the Beastie Boys growing up?
Yeah. I was a little bit into the Beastie Boys a little bit.
Because they're from Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
Favorite food at Coney Island?
Oh, my God. Totono's Pizza.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check that out. Have you been to Rucker Park?
Yep.
Play?
Yep. Wow. Been to Rucker Park. Played a little bit in Rucker Park. Played at the Cage in West Fourth.
That's so great. Yeah, I've been to Rucker Park. I didn't play, but I was there watching. It was fascinating.
Crazy. And West 4th too. Have you been to West 4th
Park? I haven't been to West 4th. No. Next time I go.
West 4th is good too. Yeah, let me know when you come.
Yeah,
you
hell can go. Yeah.
You know, I made a little basketball comeback just before COVID hit. I went, we were passing by the park, and I said, you know what, man, I haven't touched the rock in like 10 years, man.
Wow.
I went and played. I played a one-on-one, and I was still good. I couldn't believe it. I still had it.
That's crazy.
I had a problem shooting.
Yeah.
I had a problem shooting jump shots left-handed? From distance because, yeah, and because my wrist is turns a certain way because of ping pong. But taking it to the hole, God, I still had it. All the moves were there. I was so happy.
Well, you got some old game film?
I can't tell how happy I was. I was like, that's damn, crazy. I still got it. Yeah.
So what's your favorite borough besides Brooklyn?
Manhattan, of course.
Manhattan, yeah. Toughest shot in ping pong?
Toughest shot?
Yeah.
Oh, roller on the table.
So explain what that is. Is that like a backhand?
No. So it can be a forehand. It can be a backhand. Gotcha. But what you do is when the ball hits your side, right, and it's coming off the side of the table and then it's falling low to the ground, you're going to kind of scoop it up and it's going to go around the net, but you want the ball to hit the plane of the table exactly right so that it doesn't bounce. Wow. It just rolls. If you do that to someone, they can never say another word to you ever again. They're just done.
That's crazy. So that's similar to real tennis, right? You can hook it around the net. It doesn't have to go over in that situation.
Yeah. It can definitely go around the net. Wow. But you want the ball to hit exact plane of the table.
Exact plane of the table.
It doesn't bounce. It just rolls.
It just rolls. That's crazy.
And then you just walk away after that.
So when you serve, it can't bounce twice on their side, right? Otherwise,
only once.
Gotcha.
And you can serve anywhere on the table. It's a misconception. People think you can only serve one side. No.
Yeah.
Only in doubles you serve from one side. But in like singles, anywhere on the table. Yeah.
But can the ball go off the side of the table on a serve? Or does it have to go straight?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
No. Yep. Wow. Off the side of the table. I mean, that's kind of what you want to do.
Yeah.
Because depending on where the person's standing, you want to get them to move. Right.
You open up the table. Yeah. Similar tennis. I coached tennis for 15 years in college. So there's a lot of similarities. Yeah.
Do you know another sport I play pro? It's called paddle tennis. Have you ever heard of it?
Oh, you mean like,
not pickleball.
Not pickleball. Okay.
They've been trying to recruit me to play that for a long time already.
Man, but, you would be fired with that game.
Yeah. It's pretty easy.
It's fun.
It is. You like it?
It is. It's fun. They have like a national championship too. Like it's fun.
I know. Like for me, it's slow. It's very slow. Like I see that ball, like it's slow motion.
Go to the net.
it's even slower at the net. Like so paddle tennis is the court is similar to a pickleball court, except the net is a little bit lower.
Oh, lower.
It's
that's right.
Mostly like tennis. So it's very, very fast. So that means that you can have four people at the net blasting a tennis ball at each other. That's how fast
it is. That's crazy. Like,
yeah. So that's my other sport. And I love that sport equally to ping pong.
Wow.
So I practiced yesterday about 5-6 hours.
Wow.
Any sport that's really fast and aggressive, you know, I'm known for hitting people with the ball. Like, it's a crazy,
you got to.
Really fast sport. Yeah,
you have to hit people. You tell them to come correct. I mean, otherwise, yay.
Exactly. Especially if they're at the net in front of me.
Yeah. Close to
getting pegged.
That's right. You better peg their ass.
All the time. But yeah.
Are you going to Tokyo for the Olympics?
No. I'm definitely not going to Tokyo for the Olympics.
Okay. You'll be watching.
I will be here playing probably U.S. Open in paddle tennis.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah. So is that going to be streamed? Can we watch it?
They should. I hope they do it this year. I mean, I don't know what's going on since the pandemic, but they will have the national championships in St. Augustine, right? So that'll be the beach national champion St. Augustine. And then they should have the U.S. Open soon after that. And that will be in Venice Beach.
Oh, that's so fire. We'll post it on your social media so everybody who's listening can check it out. And then we can find out that way. Okay, so Queen Latifah or Salt and Pepper?
Oh, that's hard, man. I think Queen Latifah. I really like Queen Latifah because she's not only is she an amazing artist, she's an amazing actor as well. Like she's dope.
She is. Yeah, yeah. So Ice-T or Ice Cube?
Oh man, I can't even answer that one, honestly. That's hard. Oh damn. I don't know.
You're the first person to get that question. I've not asked that question before.
Yeah. Oh man. I like both of them equally.
All right, bet. Drake, Nas, Jay-Z, or Eminem?
Nas.
Wow, interesting. Ray Young, former UCLA player. Nas. Yeah, he talked about that too. Interesting. All right, so best mama joke. Your mom's so fat, when she fell, I didn't laugh, but the sidewalk cracked up. Or your mama's so fat, I swerved to miss her in my car and ran out of gas.
That one, the second one. I like the second one.
Okay, so either that one or your mama's so stupid, she stared at a cup of orange juice for 12 hours because it said concentrate.
Third one. I never heard that one. I'm gonna use that one. That's funny.
Yeah. All right. So I got three words for you. So tell me which of these three words you prefer. Okay. Mashugana. Yeah, that's the first one. Kummerspeck. Or no paking.
The third one.
No parking.
Yeah, the third one.
Man, it's technically it's a Chinese lying in a tow-away zone. No parking.
Yeah.
All right. Waffles, French toast, or pancakes?
Waffles, because I actually don't like pancakes and French toast.
Wow. Have you ever been to Waffle House?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I love waffles, man. That's like my favorite.
That's fire. You was it like chicken and waffles or just waffles by themselves or with peanut butter or what?
I like the chicken and waffles, but the chicken has to be on like a side plate because I don't like mixing my syrup with the chicken.
Oh, interesting. popcorn or candy at the movies?
Popcorn.
Butter?
Very lightly buttered.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. If your plane was crashing, who would you want sitting next to you?
Plane was crashing. Who sit next to me? It could be anyone. Anyone?
Anyone.
God.
That's classic. Sure. No one's ever said that. That's a great answer. Who's your favorite superhero?
Superhero. Oh man, let me see. Favorite superhero. That one is favorite superhero. Wow. I don't even know if I have one.
No. So okay, Fat Albert or Scooby Doo?
Fat Albert. Scooby Doo's good too. Yeah, I like Fat Albert.
Scooby Doo's solid, yeah. So if you were a potato, which way would you like to be cooked? French fries, mashed, baked, or au gratin?
Wow, French fries, mashed, baked. Maybe baked.
There you go. Price is Right or Family Feud?
Family Feud.
Yeah, of course. Man, he is hilarious.
Yeah, I love Family Feud.
So if anyone could play you in a movie, who would you choose? Who would you want to play you in the movie?
It could be anyone?
Anyone.
Oh, man, I got to go with Mr. Denzel Washington.
There you go. Denzel, of course.
Got to go with Denzel, man. Come on.
I love it.
Definitely.
That's classic. So wait, dishes, laundry, or vacuuming?
None.
You don't like any of them? Zero. So anything else before we let you go? It's been great chopping it up, man. I hope, you continue to have success in whether it's paddle tennis or, your autobiography, your documentary, and all the things that people could learn so much from how you're doing things. We had Jelani McCoy and Ray Young on from Media 34. Baron Davis is part of Slick. And I think it's really important that, the Black Dollar, the gets changed to create generational wealth, and that the stories, whether it's in the Players Tribune, where the stories are told. If no one's checked out the Players Tribune, please check it out. Some of the stories in there.
Yeah. They got some very good stories there. I'm actually trying to get into the Players Tribune.
Yeah, you
like,
should.
Like I've had a meeting with them, two meetings with them already.
Awesome.
So that's like a goal of mine, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's just one of the ways where it can happen organically when you share your story and people listen or watch, and then, you know, we teach each other about our cultures, and, you know, people make mistakes, right? Like you said in earlier, you know, some things are just ignorance and some things are just flat out racist. And, you know, if we can just have more tolerance for some of the ignorant things and, you know, find that delicate balance, then I think we can, you know, change the narrative. So I applaud you for your journey, and, you know, hopefully the best is yet to come. Congrats, and nothing but love and respect to you, and anything we can do to promote anything that you're doing down the road, when the book comes out, when the documentary is done, just let us know, and we'll do anything we can to promote it.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Anything else you want to share that maybe we didn't touch on that you want people to know?
Just pretty much like, you know, this is, you know, you hear it a lot, but really importantly, like, if you have a dream, like, people should follow it, like, no matter what, man. I never thought in a million years that you know, something like ping pong would have been the savior of my life, and I'd still be doing it. So, I mean, there's always more than one way to get to where you want to be. It's always try to keep your mind open, keep your eyes open, and reach for that opportunity when it comes. And everything is possible as long as you truly believe in it and truly want it.
That's awesome. Great way to end the show. All right, man, much love and respect, and stay in touch, and continued success, and fascinated to see what the future holds for you.
Definitely. Thank you, man. Appreciate being here. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. I appreciate the time. I know you got a lot going on, so we'll catch up soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
You got it, man. Peace out, bro. You too, man. Appreciate you. All right. Later, bro.
We hope you enjoyed today's incredible interview, and we're so honored that you shared space with us today. You can always send us an email to thesportsdeli@gmail.com. And remember, please mask up if you haven't had your vaccine yet. Black Lives Matter. Stop Asian hate. It takes a village. And until next time, for Dr. J and Coach K, I'm Hootie Hoot. Peace.